The Off the Ball Podcast Network. Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, you're welcome back. So it's finished 6-0 in that game against Tranmere Rovers. Manchester United relieved and getting the hell out of there. Manchester City 4-0 winners at home to Fulham this afternoon, and 5 minutes gone between Shrewsbury Town and Liverpool, where it is nil all thus far. We are turning to the Six Nations. This time next week, really, we'll be pretty much done on round one. Our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. In studio, we have James Downey. You're very welcome.
Cheers. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for popping in. And on the line, we have Alan Dimmock, features editor with Rugby World magazine, amongst other things. Alan, you're there?
Good. How are you?
Very well. Very well, very well, very well. Gee, Scotland are great crack, though, aren't they? I mean, you always find a way to deliver something.
We've decided to get all the drama out of the way in the build-up to the Six Nations this year rather than wait to that first game. We thought it was all going to peak, actually, when it came out that the CEO of the SIU was earning close to £1 million. But then Finn Russell decided to go and top that by having a few drinks in the hotel. So, yeah, fun and games.
What do we know about what happened exactly?
Well, I think the crux of this, and there are lots of reports that basically Finn Russell wanted to have more than a few drinks when he went into camp. There was an argument over that between him and Townsend. But really what's at the core of it all is that there's been a real breakdown in the relationship between Finn Russell and Gregor Townsend. And this culminated in Finn Russell packing his bags and heading away. There were rumours that he was already having problems with the idea of heading into camp anyway. It all came to a head at the bar, it seems. And he's popped, and he was playing for Racing 92 at the weekend. And what a fine win they had with him at the forefront. I think some people might have seen a picture of him posing after that match, topless, flexing, looking pretty pleased with himself. But what it all comes down to is a festering issue between the key playmaker for Scotland and the man who makes all the decisions. And the question really is probably, has it gone too far? Can they bring it back after Scotland play Ireland?
Because this is a real classic case of all of us in the public very easily misreading a relationship, because Finn Russell really is a player in the image of his coach. You would have thought that Townsend would look at Russell and totally identify with him and encourage him and see that, you know, the many, many very appealing aspects of his play. Was it widely known in Scottish rugby amongst the general Scottish sports fan that there was an issue in the relationship here, that this thing was festering?
Well, certainly it started to ring a few bells in that game against England in the Six Nations last season when England were absolutely scalping Scotland. They went in at halftime. It suddenly came out a few days later that there'd been a fallout in the changing room between Russell and Townsend over the tactics that were being deployed. What it was being said, what's been said by a few people, that it was about over the kicking style that Scotland were using, trying to kick for corners rather than kicking to regather. There was a disagreement over the terms of that, and then of course it was all sort of papered over the cracks by the fact that Scotland came roaring back and should have really won that game against England with their second half performance, only allowing a George Ford try at the end to make it a draw, albeit a very entertaining one. So people knew that there was something there, and they talked about tactics, and it seemed like things might be going on all right. Of course, it was all exacerbated after Scotland's dismal showing at the Rugby World Cup. So you can understand why there could have been some apprehension about coming into camp, but I don't think anyone saw this happening. Finn Russell basically saying, chips, I'm away. Interestingly enough, he did an interview with the Mail on Sunday after his game against Cast for Racing yesterday, and he said something along the lines of, I'm only a phone call away if any teammates want to phone me for advice in the Scotland camp. Of course, that was a mention of his teammates, nothing about kissing and making up with Gregor Townsend.
Because the halftime disagreement, especially in light of how well they played in the second half and how they turned things around, you could very easily play that as a healthy debate between coach and players, and that sounds like a functioning dressing room. And James Downey alongside me, I dare say, has seen many, many arguments in dressing rooms. So, okay, on one particular day there's a disagreement over tactics. That doesn't spell the end for a coach and player relationship. Do we know what the core issue is? Like, if you had to just boil it down, Alan, do we know why Finn Russell and Townsend have had this festering issue?
I think one of the things that I've heard a few people suggest is that Finn can sometimes feel like he's being picked on by Gregor. Some people have also, it's worth noting as well that a lot, we're hearing that some teammates are, feel particularly let down by Finn Russell's actions by leaving the squad this weekend and effectively ruling himself out for the foreseeable future with Scotland. But there is a sense that he kind of feels like he can be singled out by Gregor Townsend. It's no secret, and I'm sure James can speak to this, that Gregor Townsend is a very detail-orientated coach. He likes to control as much as he can within his sphere, and that, as we've seen from the way that Finn Russell likes to play, can go at loggerheads with his style. You know, sometimes we wonder whether there's circus music playing in his head, the way that he orchestrates a game. The other thing that's possibly worth mentioning here is that there's suggestions that at Racing 92, his club, the French team, who are playing very good front foot rugby at the moment, particularly in the top 14, that there's more of a sense of an open dialogue at that club, that players are encouraged almost to challenge the coaches there, to push them, whereas it seems like at the moment he isn't quite afforded that opportunity as often as he would like with Gregor Townsend, and can feel like in analysis sessions that he's the one that's getting the finger pointed at him. It's also, it could be a case of, and it's worth exploring throughout this Six Nations, is Gregor Townsend has last year signed a contract extension to 2021. He got a vote of confidence after that diabolical showing from Scotland in the Rugby World Cup. There was a show of faith in him. He's got a new coaching setup in there with Steve Tandy as the new defence coach. Peter de Villiers has come in to try and shore up Scotland's scrum. There's a few guys that will be leaving. Danny Wilson will be becoming the Glasgow head coach when Dave Rennie shoots off to coach the Wallabies. And there's a sense that maybe he doesn't want to lose face in front of these new guys. And also, he has a lot to prove himself. There's obviously going to be a lot of tension in the squad.
Mm. Russell's participation in the entire tournament is now in serious doubt because he turned down an offer to stay in camp and help Townsend and the team prepare for the game at the Aviva Stadium. On Thursday afternoon, Russell liked a tweet that said, "Nothing wrong with standing up for yourself." And he's been liking several tweets of Simon Zeebo's, who just made light of the whole situation. So it's really precarious, and it's hard to know if it gets sorted out before the end of the Six Nations. James Downey, you have obviously played for Gregor Townsend. Discuss. Does a scenario like this sound familiar in any way, or totally?
Yeah, I do think it is. There is a similar kind of, they've had run-ins before. Gregor has run-ins with players, as Alan was saying there. There's a lot, he's so detailed in what he wants to do. And you have that mercurial talent that is Finn Russell, and he has that ability to go off script. And Gregor doesn't like that, doesn't like not having control.
Even though he was that type of player himself,
exactly.
Ironically.
And that's the ironic point of it, you know. And I think as well with that, he wouldn't be the most, the biggest fan of a drinking culture either. And he tried to nip it in the bud when I was at Glasgow as well. And again, some of the Scottish guys like to kind of let their hair down and not be told, is kind of the childish way of, you're not to go and do it, so we go and do it. You want to do it even more. And I think just with that Finn Russell element, the two of them, I think that they do clash. And I think that, I think Gregor perhaps sees a lot of himself in Finn and tries to kind of control it a little bit, and Finn doesn't want that, you know, and they do come to loggerheads. And that was the dealings I had with the two of them, you know. And I can see how some of the teammates may have felt left down by Finn, you know. But I guess, look, if he's feeling picked on like that, he's going to stand up for it. Hopefully he can come back in, because he's such a talented player. And again, at the weekend in that win against Cash, he shows what Scotland need. Adam Hastings would be a different type of 10, but still a quality 10. But I just think that Finn Russell has that X factor to unlock defences.
And how did Townsend react when lads heard him say, "I don't want any drinking," and they went off drinking, and then Townsend found out about it?
Oh, he's not happy with it. Like, of course he's not. And like, when someone questions a bit of authority as well, I think that he doesn't like that, you know. And I think that players will always find a way. If, you know, I think that you've got to be treated as an adult, I think. And of course, I think the Finns overstepped the mark here. He seems to be in the wrong. But again, it's just that control that Gregor likes to have. He tries to do, like, he's probably the best technical coach I've had, everything he does. But that man management was where I thought, I guess, with all the different clubs I was at, I saw his man management style has been different. And he just
different sounds like a euphemism here.
Yeah, well, look, I just think
not great.
No. And for someone who you think is an ex-player, and for someone who has been there, done that. You think they would have had a little bit more of that, I don't know.
Empathy.
Yeah, yeah, for the player, go, I've been there, I know what you're going through, and especially if Finn Russell, you're trying to get the best out of him, yeah, but you've got to be able to have that connection as well and not flip it, and be it, not be it for me to say what he should do, but I think that, for me, he sticks to his technical and gets someone else to man-manage.
Has Townsend's man-management, Alan, been criticised over in Scotland by other players?
He's certainly, it's no secret that he tried to stamp down the drinking culture. I remember speaking to a few players when he first took over, he said something along the lines of, he's taking the company card away from us, which if you're playing away at Zebre and you record a large win, some people would appreciate the opportunity to have a couple of shandies after that one. But certainly it's the unflinching nature of how he approaches the game is something that when it's going well gets praised an awful lot. Man in management tends to be spoken about more when it's not going well. And the unavoidable fact here is that Scotland have not played well for a year. Mm. They had such a poor showing at the World Cup that something needed to happen. It's also not helped that, as well as Russell going out, they've also lost probably the most informed back three player at the moment in Darcy Graham, who won't be playing a part for the first couple of games. He's in incredible form for Edinburgh at the moment. All eyes will now turn to Adam Hastings, and it's not exactly like Adam Hastings is a company man and that he plays a very robotic style. You know, we've seen a lot from Glasgow this season that he's got a very good step inside and half break and try and create something from that. It's also interesting that Dave Rennie said last year that he said, I truly believe Adam Hastings has the ability to be better than Finn Russell. Now, he said that in public. Whether that's just because he likes to be seen to be backing a player that he has compared to one that he just lost to France, that's fair enough. But there's a sense that Adam Hastings has some unrealised talent that it remains to be seen, and we'll have to see it on the biggest possible stage now, whether he can realise that when all the attention will be on him. Mm. And I think the other thing is that the one shining light for Gregor Townsend, at least, is that Stuart Hogg put his hand up, got in touch with him and said, please, can I captain this side? Because that shows that there's a star player that they have that wants to play for Scotland and is willing to work with Gregor Townsend, and he'll need to lean on him an awful lot now.
Yeah, no, I heard him interviewed in a few places, Hogg, and he came across very well. I know our time with you is coming to an end and you have to run. We appreciate you being with us, Alan. We're all very self-obsessed and navel-gazing, and we're going to be talking about Andy Farrell and Ireland for the next while. Is there any feeling in your waters that Scotland are going to come over to Dublin and shock us all?
It wouldn't be the first time. Unfortunately, this isn't being played at Croke Park, so the chances of that seem certainly slim. I think the bookies will be fairly confident in an Ireland win in that one. I think the important thing is that key players stand up for Scotland. We'll be looking to players like Johnny Gray to lead from the front there in terms of work rate and it's interesting. I think a lot of talk will be on who plays scrum half for Ireland throughout the Six Nations. Mm-hmm. John Cooney's in incredible form, but it cuts the other way. George Horn and Ali Price between them have laid on 41 tries over the last calendar year, which is actually more than the South African duo Faf de Klerk and Cobus Rynak in the Premiership. So if they can click, it will work, but they're certainly up against it now.
Okay. Alan Dimmock, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Alan Dimmock there, who's the features editor with Rugby World magazine. Welcome, Max. So James Downey in studio. We're just chatting there a little bit about Finn Russell during the ad break. I mean, he certainly was offered the chance to come back in and make amends and make up with Gregor Townsend. He's clearly at a point where it would seem he's so sick of working under Townsend, and maybe the feeling's mutual, that he's happy to give up the Six Nations.
Yeah, and it's sad. Like, we talked about how talented he is himself and everything that he can bring to that Scottish setup. And look, we only kind of vaguely touched on the skill set of Adam Hastings, but I just think that Finn has that innate ability to really produce big performances against big teams. And look, it's going to be a massive loss for the tournament as a whole. It's going to be a good one, I think, for Ireland next week and how we deal with them. But I think for the tournament, you want to see the best players playing, and he'll certainly be lost.
I'm not sure about his all singing, all dancing reaction on social media, by the way, either, as if this is all great fun.
Yeah, no, and I think it's just that face that you're putting on and that they seem to show. But I'm sure he's struggling a bit in the inside. Like, it's a tough call. You talk about Stuart Hogg and everything playing for Scotland means to him, and on the flip side, then you've got Finn, who is happy enough to kind of step away. So look, hopefully they can mend those bridges and get him back.
We did the pay-per-view earlier with Brian Kerin and Ryan Nugent, and obviously Andy Farrell's face is everywhere. There are like a gazillion Andy Farrell pieces and people wondering what he's going to bring to the setup, and various questions that we'll get answers to over the next couple of weeks. So for instance, things like him naming the team now on Tuesday, 2 days before the Six Nations deadline. Of course, we can overread into these things, but it's been interpreted widely as a symptom of a more relaxed regime, that players aren't being told the team on a Monday and being told to keep this quiet for 72 hours. Don't tell anyone, you know, oh, geez, I don't let anything slip in a press conference. That kind of white knuckle ride maybe that was going on. This is indicative, people are saying, without knowing the full story, obviously, of a more relaxed vibe in camp. Is that what you're hearing through the grapevine?
Yeah, I think so. I think players seem to go up to camp, and they had that meeting, I think, around Christmas time, and they went up and it was just a lot more relaxed atmosphere when they went in. Just, I wouldn't say a sense of dread, but I guess coming on the back of the World Cup, that was the last time they'd all been together. And I think that the word coming out is good. It's positive. It's always going to be, I think, when you get a new coach in. And I just think that for me, the small things like that, naming the team, that's perfect. I think it's early, you know it. You can't slip up. While you look at the soccer team, and lads don't know until the day. And so that's, how do you prepare? The team will prepare. If a journalist goes along and has a look at the training session, like, you know straight away if you're in there or not. Lads are in the bibs, 99% of them are going to play. So it's just a small thing, as you say. Players won't have to worry about, you know where you stand, and you can focus on the game earlier on in the week, which you would know anyway. But I think, look, as I say, going back to the whole atmosphere within the group, seems to be good. You know, there's a few changes. People are kind of shifted sideways as well. And it'll be interesting to see how we go and what type of style. We talked about Mike Catt there during the break. He's come from that kind of, that Bath, you mentioned Brian Ashton era of open rugby that they used to be able to bring in. I wonder, you couldn't see much from Italy, given how lack of possession that they got in the last couple of World Cup and Six Nations. And
Conor O'Shea would argue that actually he did improve things from an attack point of view. That remains to be seen. And yeah, like a lot of the pieces about Catt, because he's kind of come in, and I don't think this ticket is kind of grabbed public imagination all that much. Andy Farrell's a continuity appointment, which a year ago seemed like a great thing, and now a continuity appointment is almost the last thing people want. But he's in, and I think he has the goodwill and support generally of most people. But Mike Catt coming in, you know, in terms of like attacking rugby and what we're going to get, I don't think it's a name which has set the world alight. Equally though, it does seem like he's an incredibly intelligent player, you know, learned at the feet of Brian Ashton, then went in with England, and maybe, I don't know how dominant a voice he was in that English setup. Certainly impressive enough for Farrell to say to him, I want you now. So what do you know of Catt, or the type of rugby he's going to look to get the Irish attack playing?
Again, I wouldn't know too much about his, I guess, coaching abilities, but I think if you're coming from that era of that, the way Bath played when he was at London Irish as well, small bit of coaching there, and I think it's a decent brand of rugby. You know, again, international rugby is going to be slightly different. You don't have your players for as long. You can't get that day-to-day kind of quality together, time together that works with clubs. But again, I just think that Farrell as well is a continuation of kind of Joe, but he's learned from Joe. He learns what works, what doesn't work. I think from the Saracens end of things as well, he's seen what works, what doesn't work. From his rugby league background, he can see. He's got his own ideas. I think he's his own man as well.
And he's seen Lancaster, he's seen Gatland.
Exactly, and we're seeing how well that they've done. So he's learned from the best. He's done the D, he's done different areas, he's done attack. Now he's the head man, and look, there's got to be a time you step up, and you've got to trust the change. Look, I'm obviously, it's early doors, fully behind him, but I think he can do good things. I don't think we're going to get the wholesale rip a band-aid off and go, right, this is 10 new starters and new caps and stuff. I think he's been smart in the squad he's picked, gone on a bit of form as well, rather than previous regime, which was kind of, you've money in the bank and we're going to go with it.
Mm. So you don't think you'll see wholesale changes?
I don't think you can. Ultimately, it's the bread and butter of the RFU that finance comes in with CVC there now and the whole money aspect of it. If you come, the difference between coming first and fourth or fifth, it can be 8-9 million, you know, and that's going to be massive in the coffers of the RFU. They won't want to take, oh, we'll lose five, but we've blooded a lot of players. You're going to have to win games. These players are going to have to get used to winning again. And it starts, you can't, like we're talking again, and you mentioned if we get two losses, that's not a great start, you know, and we're behind the eight ball then. But it's a perfect start that now we have two home games.
Yeah, so Scotland and Wales first up. I mean, in some respects, that's what you would want. Equally then, you have to go France away and you have to go England away. I mean, if you go back to 2 years ago and the Grand Slam, that campaign started with the Johnny Sexton drop goal in Paris and then the Grand Slam win at Twickenham. That ain't happening this year. France and England are in very different places to where they were in 2018. France in particular are looking very dangerous, not least because Sean Edwards has gone in. If he can sort out their defence and you throw in the talent they have going forward, I mean, they've been a sleeping giant for quite some time now. There are signs of them stirring.
Yeah, and I think when you look back to when kind of France had that continuity and consistency where they were competing all the time, I think it was it Dave Ellis who's the defence coach perhaps? And again, one of these kind of rugby league lads who goes in and just organises them, you know. That's it, exactly, you know. And the French guys, the guys that play in France come out and say, it's fine for a while, but then the mindset will flick. If they concede, the whole thing will change and players will just kind of go into their norm, you know. If they can get that structure, the French don't want to play to structure, but if they can get a little bit of structure, we can see how devastated they've been and the quality of players they have, the young players, a lot of players in the under-20s, did he say 19 uncapped or something? Like, it's just massive.
Scrum halves are all kids, but very talented ones, not least DuPont. They have Intermac, they have Teddy Thomas, Vakatawa. Like, the tie leg is outrageous.
But I think it's time for France to, like, you haven't picked Parra, you haven't picked some of the 10s, they've gone with Lopez, and so they always shop and change their 9 and 10. But these young guys, they need to stick with them, get one or two that work, stick with them, have a guy coming off making plenty of impact. But they have these quality players, so it's just they need to back them and kind of go with them, I think.
To revert to Ireland for a second then, so you said not wholesale changes, because that's almost been the key debate, I suppose, over the last 2-3 months in particular. And obviously there are many people saying, let's just completely throw 4, 5, 6 guys in there. There's pros and cons to that, obviously. Like, you don't want to throw guys in and damage them either, but it's very tempting. If you don't do it now, when do you do it?
Yeah, no, I completely think that players will get a chance, but I don't think he's got, like, geez, I could be proven wrong, but I don't think he's going to make 5 changes and go, right, here's 5 new caps. I'm talking new caps as opposed to kind of other, like, I think.
So could you, like, if he somehow worked in Deegan, and you're going to ask me, well, who are you taking out and why? And they're fair questions too, but Deegan, Doris, Cooney, what the hell, Andrew Conway, because he's in good form. They're 4 big enough changes. I mean, I don't know how many more you make.
Yeah, no, but
but they're conceived, that's real regeneration, that's real competition for places, that's a real sign to Conor Murray and to, you know, the likes of O'Mahony and Stander. Right, there's a new sheriff in town. You guys are going to have to play your absolute best now. People want to see that kind of environment at Irish camp. I think every tenure definitely slips into, after a year or two, it's fairly obvious who a coach likes.
Yeah.
And everyone can guess the 13 or the 15 in most coaches after a year or two. But when you first come in, you have a real chance to set a certain tone, I suppose, and you have cash in the bank. And if he went with all those young players, he'd buy himself a bit of time in the public's mind, I would suspect.
I think so, and I think it's like it's a clean slate, and I think that's the message that he's gotten across to the players, is that it's, we're coming in here and what's happened before has happened, even though I was part of it. Now it's like, you know, everyone's starting afresh, and he's bringing in these young guys who I think are going to push on the other guys as well, you know. And I think you've seen how well it's worked at Leinster in terms of that competition and driving standards and results and everything that they've achieved there. And as a result, you've so many players in the squad. I think, like, you look at your Caelan Doris and your Max Deegans and your Ronan Kelleher's, who I'd love to see in this. I think he's going to be an absolute star. But I just think some of those changes you mentioned, yeah, I'd agree with, but you're going to talk about who you're going to jump in, who you're going to jump out. It's all going to be how they train in a camp, what he wants to do, what type of game. Because we still don't know until they play the first game, what's the game plan going to be? Like, you know, what ways you want to play it? Once he names the team, we're all going to jump out and go, oh, he obviously wants to go this way or that way. You'd like to see changes. You'd like to see a bit of freshness brought in. How much he can do, I don't know, because ultimately he'll want to win. He'll want to get off with the W.
And there's a counter-argument to every point I'd make, but arguably if he chooses conservatively, if he goes with Murray over Cooney, if he goes Omani's in, Stander's in, all of these selections, Stockdale and Earl stay in, midfield familiar, everywhere familiar, and for whatever reason things don't go well, say Wales in the second game at home, then suddenly it's, oh, this is 2019 all over again, he's picking the same players, this isn't moving on. And then you're looking at throwing a bunch of kids into the crisis game the following week.
Yeah.
You know, so at least if you put a few in and you lose, you buy yourself a bit of time and a bit of understanding. These are the dilemmas which he's probably thrown around. And I don't know, maybe it gets too complicated that trying to strategize this whole thing out with the possibility of a loss is the wrong thing to do. And if you just try and win each game, maybe that's the simplest way for him not to melt his head. But certainly if you pick who you're picking in 2019 and it doesn't go well, he'll be very much open to the accusation of same old here.
Yeah, oh no, of course. And then you're going to make the changes for the Italian game and then it's going to be a tight game and we're going to just about get over the line. And yeah, no one wants that.
So at least fourth in the Six Nations.
Exactly. You know, and you want these guys who have earned their chance to play. And is he going on form? We'll soon find out.
Yeah.
I'd like to think so. You look at his selection and you can only go on the squad he selected. Yeah, it is on form. I like what they've done with the four young guys, bringing them up to camp, getting them used to that. I think that's exactly what's needed.
But Schmidt did that, to be fair. Like we can.
But he's named it this time, as opposed
it's more
to
official. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. As opposed to you rock up and there's extra lads are training. But these guys are named, and they get the publicity of it. You know, the pat on the back and everyone. Oh, well done, you've made a squad.
Feel good. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And that's small things, and these are small percentages that can. Down the line, these players, when they are in there, it'll be seamless, you know, and you want that seamless transition. But again, back to like the selection process of it, I don't think he's going to go the same as what he has done. I don't think he can in terms of, like you've mentioned there, that like if he sticks with that group, I think he'll make a couple. I think he'll put in a few of those changes. I just don't think he can make too many initially.
No, I accept that.
You know?
And to be fair, you would absolutely appreciate this, as a young player coming into a team, and Leinster do this brilliantly, they put in a framework of experience around the two or three young lads dropped in, as opposed to eight young lads dropped in and it feels like a trial match and all shape goes. That's not fair either.
No.
You need to come into a working team, hopefully, so I get that. Speaking of, so no Billy Vunipola is crucial for England, but Eddie Jones has said it's their ambition to make England the greatest side of all time. Which is just brilliant. they are very much everybody's favourites. Ireland have to go to Twickenham. The Vunipola injury aside, I mean, they look in great shape. The display we saw against the All Blacks in the World Cup semi-final was kind of as good as it gets. Is there any chink you see there? Any reason not to think they'll be Six Nations champions, if not Grand Slam champions?
Oh, man, they're going to be tough. I think as well with the whole kind of Saracens episode, that the Saracens players in camp will be even more determined to prove points. He's changed up the backroom staff a little bit, which I think is going to be good for England.
Mm.
But they just look pretty unstoppable at the moment, and the squad they've picked, and they've a lot of talented players, a lot of young talented players coming through as well. And you look at guys like Alex Dombrandt, who's not even in the squad, and he was extremely good today for Harlequins again. And look, these players that he's able to leave out, I don't think we could, but look, I think England would be certainly ones to stop. But look, you let Eddie Jones, you give enough rope, and hopefully he can do a job on himself, you know. But I think it's massive that Billy's gone. Small little things, you take these small little chinks and you kind of work with it. It's going to be tough, I think, for Ireland, if we're looking at that, going over to Twickenham. That's going to be like that's a tough place to go.
And Paris,
France.
It's the bad year.
It is a bad. Yeah. Well, again, like we mentioned the last time, it was Grand Slam the last time we did it. But again, you look at that. It was the last minute. Johnny Sexton drop goal. So, you know, could have been a very different Six Nations.
Yeah, and England were at their lowest point. Like, Jones's job was on the line then, really.
Yeah.
What about Wales? I mean, Wayne Pivac coming in, it's funny, you know, the pressure on coaches. The word now in Wales is, well, we want to see more exciting, open brand of rugby. Literally, Warren Gatland is sailing off with how many Grand Slams and how many semi-finals, and all they're like is, can we play better rugby? That's like the life of a coach. So over to you, Wayne Pivac, with a Jonathan Davies-sized hole in your midfield as well. So I don't know what to expect from Wales. They come to Dublin this year in round two.
Yeah. Wales are a strange one, I think. If they miss one or two players as well, I think Jonathan Davies, as you mentioned, him missing is going to be huge. Mm. I think his backroom staff, he's gotten in Stephen Jones. I worked under him, played with him as well at Wasps, and he was another astute mind in how he wants to play the game. Wants to play it openly, but again, it's international rugby. It's like there are some constraints on it that you won't be able to kind of open up as much as the Welsh public might want to do, because you can play this unbelievable brand of rugby and be hammered, and or what you want wins, you want titles. What do they want?
We want everything.
Exactly. You want your cake and you want to eat it. Yeah. So it's, I think that he's going to, it will take a while for him to get what his game plan across.
Sam Warburton's in there as well.
Exactly, which another smart one. You know, these guys will have looked up to him, and Sam Warburton's still a young guy, and he'll give an awful lot back in. It's smart from a foreign coach to kind of come in and do that and bring in these local guys who've been there, done that, and the players respect them, and it will bring that element of Welshness, but yet that little bit of Kiwi nous, which has been proven.
Who's your Six Nations winner?
At the moment, unfortunately, England, I can see it, but if France get their act together, and that's a big if, and every year it's a big if, but I just think that with the signing, with the new coaches, the squad they have, they can be a hell of a shock, hell of a surprise team.
And Ireland somewhere third.
Yes, perhaps second, perhaps third. I think because there's a lot of changes across the board in terms of coaching staff, he'll be given time. You know, I think it will take time, but I think ultimately it'll be a decent, it's a decent appointment. I'm really happy with the appointment myself, and in terms of what I think he's going to bring. I think third, if we can do better than that, even better.
Okay. James Downey, thanks so much for popping in. No, appreciate it.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.